This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Scotty.
Hey, Curdy B.
You ready for this one?
I'm always ready to laugh.
All right. Fungus full of psychedelic drugs could cause cicadas' butts to fall off.
Oh, it's cicada season on the East Coast, or maybe everywhere. Okay, let's get into some bananas.
Ladies and gentlemen and non-binary folks everywhere, welcome to Bananas.
I'm Scotty Landis. That's Kurt Brownoller. We're on the Exactly Right Network, and we're thrilled to be the silliest little news podcast you've ever heard. Kurt, how are you?
I'm good. I do have one thing to say before we bring on our wonderful, wonderful guest, and that is okay. Connecticut and New England in general. I am going to be at the Space Ballroom October 23rd, which is in Hamden, Connecticut. And it's a really, really, if you've never been to Space Ballroom, it's just so fun. I've played there before with Eugene Merman, and I love it. I'm very excited. Tickets are all over the Instagram and et cetera, et cetera.
Great.
Also,
go.
My voice is a little broken from Portland, but the shows were amazing. And I missed you,
good,
Scotty.
Very good. Oh, well, I'm sorry I wasn't there. I'm in Maryland eating crab cakes and watching lacrosse with my family. So I had to do stuff. I'm an ultra uncle. I'm a power uncle. And I hadn't really seen my nephews. And both their birthdays are in the same week. So I apologize. But I'll be there. Don't worry. I'll show up to the next one.
No, no obligation. Are you guys ready? Let's just bring her on. Our guest.
Let's bring her on.
Today is an award-winning public radio producer and writer. You might know her from This American Life, writing for TBS's Search Party, or her very wonderful podcast, Mystery Show. Her new podcast, Election Profit Makers, is available everywhere right now. Please welcome the wonderful Starley Kine.
Woo! Thank you.
Hi, Starley.
Hi.
We're so glad to have you on Bananas. Thanks for
Thank
being
you.
Here.
You're welcome.
Where are you currently right now?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh. That's right.
That's the right. An exhale answer of that. A sigh out is what LA deserves a lot of the year.
I couldn't agree more.
Yes.
Anyone who doesn't sigh it out is denying something to themselves.
Yeah. They're in denial of what's going on around them at all times. And it's those rare days in LA where you feel so happy because you're like, well, I can't see any smoke. And there wasn't an earthquake, and I'm not stuck in traffic. All the stereotypes about LA ring true 12 months a year.
Yeah, now you have to throw down a year-long lockdown into that.
Yes.
All kind of awards that we're winning for that.
Very fun.
Yeah. Of all the things you like, of all the things that you do, because you're writing on Search Party right now, do you prefer that to other things, or is it different? Which is, where do you feel most alive, Starley?
Yes.
It is different. I like that it's different. That's why I wanted to do it. Because it was scary. Writing for TV felt scary and out of my comfort zone.
Yes.
And so I thought that was good. But I also know it was so out of my comfort zone that it made me understand how many people, like it made me understand why people stay in things.
Yes. That's right.
Being uncomfortable was like, now I understand why comfort is so popular.
Yeah. I don't think they should, but I understood like individual people I know decisions about why they did it. I don't agree with it necessarily, but
that's right.
It's hard. It's hard to do the thing that you don't know how to do.
Oh, right. I agree. I started doing stand-up at 29 after I had just, you know, done so many other things, and it was like starting over again. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like you feel like, I thought I knew how the world worked, and now there's so much that I'm unsure about. But that's exciting. It's like it's being on the beach in between the ocean and the sand and the land, you know?
Yeah. Between that's the parking lot and the sea.
Was it a Zoom room for you? Was that your first experience, was having to write in a Zoom writer's room?
No, I've worked on Search Party 5 seasons.
Since day one. Okay, gotcha. So, since day one. Cool.
So that, in that regard, it was a Zoom room for the 5th season. We just finished the 5th season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that made it easier or more comfortable because it was all people that have been there on the show the whole time.
That and definitely helps, yes.
Yeah, so we know what each other looks like standing up from the torso down. We picture that. And we had an ease. But even with that, at the beginning of the Zoom room, I was like, oh, I was getting worried that it was so productive that I was like, are they going to make it so that this is the new model and there's the in-person room? But by the end, we were so fatigued from it that, and I'm not saying it didn't work out, but it's not the way to go.
No, it seems like a real bummer. It's like not, it's the best we could do, but it's not as creative. Like a really good writer's room with really good group of people, and you get that rapport, and everybody kind of plays their roles well. When it works, it is, you can't believe it's a job. And when it doesn't work, it's hell on earth. It's so bad.
And it was, everyone in that room had been pretty much there from the beginning. So it was just a very strange way to end the 5th season of being like, just that signing off and no drinks, no hanging out.
Leave meeting? I guess so.
Yeah. Who's going to leave? Who's going to push the button first?
When I was in my mid-20s, one of my uncles who's lived on Nantucket for a really long time, he was like, you've moved around a lot. I said, yes. He goes, are you comfortable being alone? And I said, yes. He goes, how long have you been comfortable being alone? I was like, well, I think for a long time. But he's like, did you ever move to a new place and not know anyone, and you just have those nights where it's just quiet in your place? And it's like, if you're a reader, amen. Like, good for you. Or if you can find music, you get it. And I was like, yes. But I knew what he was talking about. It was like, it took up to a certain point of being so, having to get comfortable with feeling totally anxious and weird and out of place. And then slowly you find yourself and you go, okay, I can do this. And now I think I'm drawn to moving and going new places and making new friends all the time because of, you know, in my early 20s or whatever, feeling that discomfort and trying something new.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like most people go in the opposite direction in terms of making new friends and having movement in their lives. So, I think it's a divide.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's what I tell people the most when they ask me about like what they should do. Even in a big field, just I think you should push yourself past it. It's not going to work. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to work out.
That's right.
But it does make you feel more alive. The anxiety of it makes you feel more alive.
Yeah, it's just about finding that kind of new phase of your life, you know? And with that, do you guys want to hear about the new phase of life these cicadas are going through?
Incredible. Incredible.
I was looking for that segue, and I'm very excited I found it.
Incredible work. I love
that.
Thank
you so much.
17 years in coming. Very good job, Curdy B.
Okay. You ready, Starly?
Yeah.
Here we go. So, fungus full of psychedelic drugs could cause cicadas' butts to fall off. Here it is. Sounds like a twisted mix of Invasion of the Body Snatchers and a Grateful Dead show, but John Lil promised that it's all too real. Mm-hmm. This month, as billions of brood X cicadas emerge from the dirt in Indiana and more than a dozen other states for the first time in 17 years, some of the bugs will suffer a horrific science fiction-like fate. There's no delicate way to do this, so here's the gist all at once. P.S. Okay. This was sent in by Hayden Alexander, who is...
Thank you, Hayden.
XOXO Gossip Gergs.
Gossip Gergs, sure.
This is on South Bend Tribune, and it's by John Webb Evansville, who is the best in the biz.
Greatest writer there's ever been.
Okay, here's how it works. A fungus laced with the same chemical as psychedelic mushrooms will invade their bodies and eat away their insides until their abdomens crack, fall off, and get replaced with a ball of white spores.
Oh.
Because they're either bombed on psilocybin or under the control of the fungus in some other way, the cicadas will not notice. With missing butts and full hearts, they'll forge ahead with their only reason for existing, finding a mate and reproducing.
Cool life. All right.
And so basically their bottom half is, I'm not going to read this whole thing because this is very long about how this goes on. Mm-hmm. But basically the fungus is their lower half, and the fungus also affects their brains so that they send out signals to attract both male and female mates. So it doesn't, so they can just spread it as much as possible. And then when the mating begins, it's just mashing into this spore butt that then explodes and sends spores everywhere just for this fungus to like live longer. Mm-hmm. So that is, I mean, there's a lot more I could get into, but it's essentially the quote from Lil is, it's a gender bending death zombie fungus.
Ooh, nature finds a way.
And then what is the mating part of it?
So the mating part is that it affects males more than females.
Uh-huh.
And so the males usually make that noise, that like UFO noise that you hear. And then the females will respond with a flick of their wings. And then that's how they find each other. Mm-hmm. But the fungus causes the brain to rewire so that they make both the male noise and they do the female wing flicking thing so that males are also attracted and females are attracted. So it's just like, so that spore can get as far away as possible.
My goodness.
It's so fucking crazy.
My goodness. And that only happens every 17 years. This is a wild one.
Right. Like that fungus is just like, look, I have a blast every 17 years. And for the rest of the time, I'm waiting.
Does it leave behind in its wake any, like, are they more open-minded after the fungus is gone?
Great
like
question.
Is there any residual progressiveness?
They're definitely more open-butted
because
they die immediately after mating.
I was dating someone and she planned she was like, I have this great idea for a romantic getaway. We're going to have so much fun. And so she rented a cabin just north of LA and we drove up about an hour or so. And her big surprise was we were going to sit, that the cabin had a huge indoor jacuzzi and we were both going to sit in it and we were both going to eat chocolate mushrooms and just enjoy each other and trip and sit in a hot tub. And the hot tub filled halfway before it ran out of hot water. So we sat in less than waist deep, lukewarm water. And then the chocolate shrooms we ate didn't work. So we sat in there for an hour and a half, just gabbing, just two naked people gabbing, waiting for something interesting to happen. And instead, we just got colder and colder and colder. And then went outside and roasted marshmallows like normal people should do.
If the shrooms had worked, would it have made it so that you felt that the hot tub was more full than it was and warmer?
I was going off of what you asked about if them being more open-minded about their post-coitus experience.
Yeah.
I was hoping that at least it would have, the sounds and the sensation of the water on our bodies would have at least been something fascinating instead of us just talking about the industry in another town.
It could have gone the other way where the half fullness of it was the thing that you focused on about how bad it was.
Right.
Yeah.
It was the longest hour and a half I can remember in the last 5-10 years. So
I sat in a lukewarm hot tub recently. It is really hard to get past.
Yes.
Yeah.
It becomes like mortality itself. Like you can't think of anything else. You just want it to end.
It's not hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really question a lot of things when you question the people that invited you. You questioned your decisions up to that point, and there is a ticking clock where you're, especially when you're with somebody else, you're like, how long are we both going to pretend like this is okay?
Right. Because it is, doing a hot tub with a friend is just essentially like taking a bath with them. And if it's just a cool a cool water bath that makes it even worse. I would always go into hot hotel hot tubs when I'm on tour by myself, and I'd be like, I just want to relax. So I'd go down to the hot tub.
Yeah.
And invariably, there would be, I would get in, and I would be there for like 2 minutes by myself, and then a child would get in with me that I didn't know. And so it was always just like me trying to not make eye contact with a child who, and then it's just like, should I not be here? I feel like I'm supposed to be in a hot tub. Is the child not supposed to be here? And then it would just be me awkwardly trying to not look at the child and then be like, I gotta get out. It was never relaxing.
Yes. There's no opening sentence that makes that okay. Now that you're a dad, you'd probably be better at it. But up until that point, there's just no, you can't really say anything to that kid. So you're better off avoiding them at all costs. And then you look even stranger.
I've tried that in the past because when I'm also on tour now that I have kids and I see people with kids,
yes.
I'm always like so smiley. And I'm always just like, I have one of those at home. And they're always just like, what the fuck? Okay, who cares? This is not a connection for us.
Yeah.
No.
That happens when you walk dogs too.
Yes, right.
The people, if your dog shows any interest in the other person, they have a dog at home, but they're not with their dog. They have, it's a law that says they have to say, they smell my dog on me. They smell the dog. Yeah. And I'm like, to convey that they have one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are you a dog owner? Does this happen to you?
It does. Yeah.
And do you know the names of dogs in your neighborhood, but not their owners?
I'm not that person. I don't, okay. The whole thing of like talking to the dog and acting as though there's like a ventriloquist act where the people have to answer. Like that happens to me all the time. They'll ask, because what they do is they ask the dog their name.
Who are you?
And
who
the human answers, yes.
Who are you, bud? Oh, and, you're so big.
Yeah. And I will not pretend. I mean, I'll answer if they ask my dog's name, but I will not do it on the other end. And the new thing is I just got a puppy too.
Okay.
And this puppy has a broken toe. I know, but it's really cute actually. Like when I first got him, he was really small and he ran through the door as it was closing. And he nicked his toe and he's had this little adorable cast on it.
No.
Like a
so
splint.
He limps.
Yeah. Oh, for real. Over
he doesn't limp. He doesn't limp. It's up the arm. It's a splint and it's iconic, frankly.
Oh my God.
And he's had it almost as long as he's been alive. Once it comes off, pandemic over once his cast comes off.
Yes.
To represent that. But he doesn't limp. He can run on it. It doesn't slow him down at all. He can, when he plays with bigger dogs, he like punches them in the face with it. It's like a boxing glove.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. But he's got this little thing on his toe. And
conversation
now,
piece.
But it's not even a conversation. What it does, I now walk to the neighborhood and I just hear a chorus of, mm-hmm. What happened to his toe? Oh, what happened?
Oh,
what
no.
happened? And they go, they don't want me to explain. The explanation is not interesting. So even if I start explaining, there's nothing, there's nowhere to go. It's a tick. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they need to ask it, but they
no.
Do.
Yeah.
And is it one specific line? It's just what happened to your foot or what happened to your paw? Is that it?
Oh, what happened to his? Oh, what happened? What happened to his foot? Oh, what happened to his foot? And I just like walk down and I just like I'm hearing voices in my head all day long, and it's just a question that can't. It doesn't go anywhere. It even when I have answered, they don't want to hear. They want that stop. They don't want to hear anymore.
It stops right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they take photos of your dog with a little cast on?
That's what. So sometimes it's not. It's like they can't help them. It's like a hiccup. They have to get it out. It really is like a tick. Like it has to come out of their body, but they don't, they're never going to see this dog again. They have no relationship with them.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear the answer.
That's right. That's
I do not recommend anyone having a puppy with a broken foot for this reason.
Oh, of course not.
Imagine those dogs that have wheels for back legs. The ones your life is over. You
That's
might as
it.
Well just get a talk boy and just have it pre-recorded answers ready.
Maybe with the wheels, they can fill in the gaps a little bit more. Like they just know something. That's probably more like, like a lot of noise, like sympathetic sounds and really intense eye trying to show that. Convey that you feel sympathy for this dog.
Yes.
They probably don't ask the question. Mine is of a mystery that they feel compelled to put it in question form.
And it's going to have a nice full life. It's a puppy. So they know that this is just chapter one of this poor little pup's life.
Yeah. And you know, the dogs that don't have anyone saying anything to them are the ones that have just their back two legs,
mm-hmm.
who are just running upright like a human. And everyone's just like, we're not talking. We're not going to say a goddamn thing.
Get in the car. Yeah. Get in the car. Lock the doors. There is a banshee on the loose.
The videos of those dogs always, I'm like, it fills me with like hope and also makes me laugh a lot. You know, it's like, yes. He's doing it and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. That is what an alien will look like.
The dogs want you to laugh. They like that. That's what
they do.
Yeah.
I love a laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty, you two. I have another story for us all.
Give it to us.
Starly, have you ever shot a bow and arrow? Just a lead question.
I don't think.
Summer camp or.
You can go to summer camp.
Carnival. Well, weird carnival.
It's a life regret.
Renaissance fair.
Okay. Bow and arrow date.
Oh, God. That's probably going to be a thing. All those hatchet bars are huge. Just throw a hatchet.
I hate those bars. I find that incredibly difficult. I went once and I was like, it's so difficult to throw a hatchet into a wall. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why this is just a very common thing now.
Well, you said date bars do this?
Yeah, it's like a place you like throw hatchets into the wall.
So it's that difficult. I would think you'd want to look good on your date. So it's a strange thing to combine it with something that you don't look good doing.
Exactly. And that you can't do. Maybe that's the bonding thing. Mm.
That's right. Go bowling, put the bumpers in, everybody gets a 300, goes home happy, get married a year later. Okay, so here's the story from Yahoo News, sent in by Megan Porter. Thank you so much, Megan Porter. No writer on this one. Yahoo News said, screw you guys. Marijuana-wrapped arrow shot towards Washington jail.
Oh, wonderful.
It's wonderful. Bellingham, Washington. A man is accused of trying to get marijuana into a Washington state jail by attaching it to an arrow that he shot onto the roof.
He shot it onto the roof. I thought he would just like shoot it into like the yard, you know?
That's so dangerous. Between the bars
of a little window.
Just ringing your tin cup on the windows and an arrow comes by. You roll it real fast and smoke it down. A Whatcom County Sheriff's employee saw a man step out of his pickup truck, retrieve a bow, and launch an arrow towards the jail's second floor recreation area. Sure, but it missed its target. Sheriff Bill Elfo said the man, identified as 36-year-old David Wayne Jordan, serial killer or guy that shoots an arrow out of prison every time, was arrested for...
Co-creator of Wet Hot.
Well, middle name, sorry. Yes. Wayne with a Y, not David Wayne. Wait,
is his first name David? Isn't his middle name Wayne? David Wayne?
David Wayne Jordan.
David Wayne Jordan.
It sounds like a Stella character looking back.
It does.
He was arrested for investigation of introducing contraband into a jail, resisting arrest. I mean, of course you're going to resist arrest at this point, and obstructing law enforcement. The Bellingham Herald reports that Jordan has served 20 days in jail earlier this month for assault and a resisting arrest. So this guy was an inside man who became an outside man who tried to launch weed back into jail. The sheriff says Jordan told deputies he had been aiming at a squirrel, but he couldn't explain why attaching marijuana to the arrow would aid in squirrel hunting. So he had a story.
Yeah, a story. Also, squirrel hunting. I bow hunt. What? Squirrels. You got to spend a lot of time in the woods. You really got to get to know where they go.
Hard as hell to do. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
It was a good plan foiled.
Yeah.
Do we think like his kink was, because he did prison contraband while not being in prison. Because prison contraband is a thing within prison, but he wasn't in prison, so he had to get it in there in order to then get himself. It's a real long con to get in prison.
Yes.
Send the marijuana in first.
Yes. Then he goes, gets arrested again. Yeah, it's a three-step plan. You get out of jail.
Yeah.
You find an arrow. You buy some weed, and you shoot it back in, and then you get rearrested.
I've got a theory. He was already planning on getting rearrested, and he's like, I got to do this. I got to go back in. But you know what? I definitely want to get high while I'm in there. I'm going to shoot an arrow full of weed there. I'll get arrested for that. I'll go on in. Then I'll have weed when I'm in there.
So it was like a Red Was Here scenario.
Yes.
Shawshank. Type thing.
Yes.
He couldn't hack it. He'd been inside for too long and he had to return, but he wasn't going back without a plan to get high. Yeah.
Sweet leaf. Yeah, yeah, he had to get back in there. But also, these are the kind of dumb crimes that if he had executed this, if he had shot weed to a fellow inmate and got away, an arrow doesn't make any noise. This is a genius plan. But instead, it went really bad. And then his lie and excuse was incredible. He shouldn't have said anything, but the fact that he did just makes us love that David Wayne Jordan that much more. When I was in college at University of West Florida for one semester, I went down because I asked the domestic exchange person what school is closest to a beach. And she said, University of Hawaii. And I said, I would like to go. And then it was way too expensive. And then she said, West Florida's near the beach. So I went. And when I was there, I took only electives. So I took Spanish one. I took Hitchcock film studies. I took improv acting, and I took regular acting.
Time out. Who's teaching improv down at University of West Florida?
It was a very nice woman It was David Wayne Jordan. It was David Wayne Jordan. That's why I picked this story. Yeah. I miss him
Say you're, so okay, this is the scenario. You're with a bow and arrow, and you're hunting. What are you hunting? What are you hunting? Tell me.
Oh, gosh. She was a really nice woman that went page for page from the Stella Adler Improv Handbook, where we would just open, not like we didn't go page by page, just you start at page one and end at 300. She would just flip to a page, and whatever exercise was on that page, we would do that improv. So all of us thought we were going to naturally be on SNL within 6 months of taking this class. And there's one kid, I think his name was Dusty or Dustin, and I don't really recall because he stood in the corner and scowled at everybody and never participated, and I'm sure he failed the class. But one day, he was waiting out by my friend Russ's car in the parking lot when we were leaving improv class, and he's just standing there, and we're like, hey, man, and he's like, I need a ride. And so Russ says, okay. And so the guy tells us where he lives, and over about the first 15 minutes of this drive, not a word is said from Dusty in the back seat. Nothing. Just sitting there scowling, hat pulled down, probably had a dip in. And finally, Russ goes, you don't say a lot, do you? You're not, you know, like you're a man of few words back there. And Dusty just goes, I will answer any question you ask me. So now the intensity in this traveling car going to Gulf Breeze is, it's very awkward. And so Russ just jumps in, tries to shock him and goes, would you have sex with a dead person? And Dusty waits a long, long, drawn-out beat and says, well, how long have they been dead? And so then the conversation gets way more interesting. So I start laughing right away. Russ and Dusty are getting into it and saying, well, like, is that person still warm? Were they attractive before they died? All those kind of dumb details. So it gets quiet again. And we're pretty close to this dude's house. And then Russ goes, so is it a yes or no? And Dusty goes, well, how did they die? And so I'm crying, laughing. And I go, why does that matter? He goes, well, it matters, Scotty. If they had a heart attack, it's a lot different than getting shot with a bow and arrow. Gets out of the car at the red light, walks into the woods to a shitty apartment complex. And I never saw him in improv class ever again. I flipped some trigger. Also, I totally understand his argument. Oh, so if you're out there, Dusty, I hope you don't own a bow and arrow. That's what I really hope.
Is it that different being shot and being killed with a bow and arrow? Like if you had to pick the two examples of contrasting ways of dying.
Right, heart
on
attack
the spectrum,
or being shot by a bow and arrow.
Oh, heart attack. It was heart attack. Oh, heart attack
yeah,
was the
heart
first one.
Heart attack or bow and arrow.
I still think it's not that far, as far as you can go in the This is why he didn't absorb anything from improv class.
No.
Not at all. No, he definitely. He's not a guy who's like, what's the most different thing from a heart attack? He didn't really think that far.
In his mind, he probably went heart attack when you bow and arrow often gets shot in the heart. So he did like, in his mind, he went word association to the most similar.
Yes. Or his just visual was, when I picture bow and arrow death, it's to the back, an arrow to the back, face down, kind of elegant, classic and historic. I bet he pictured straight through the face. That's what old
That's interesting.
That's what
that
old
you,
Dusty was
it's
thinking.
Interesting that you picture through the back.
Where do you picture it? Multiple arrows.
Right in the heart.
Right square in the heart.
Yeah.
I what a romantic in the starlet. Thigh.
Thigh death, slow, painful death,
and then like infection sets in.
Yeah, just limping around, And it's maybe still there, you know, because you don't want to pull it out because it's going to bleed out. You're in it. Mm-hmm. You're somewhere where you're running away from something in that situation.
And then how long? Wow. How long do you live before? Like, is it years pass?
Or like a Civil War general? Or are you on an old wooden crutch with a missing leg?
I never take it out because it's a lesson that I learned.
It's like a splinter. It'll work its way through.
It's worked 1 inch per year.
This is like a new dream analysis. I think we stumbled upon something. Like, am I afraid of being stabbed in the back?
Yeah.
And Starly, do you have a vulnerable heart? Are you afraid of being hurt in love?
Absolutely.
And Kurt?
Yeah.
Kurt, you got bad knees these days.
Something to talk about with people.
Desperate for something to talk about.
It should be unique.
It should be how we start conversations post-pandemic. If you need something...
Exactly, because it's not like, what have you been doing? It's just like, listen, you get shot with an arrow where you want it.
Bananimals, if you're listening to this and your partner isn't, tonight some point around dinner afterwards, just turn to your partner and say, when you picture somebody being shot and killed with an arrow, where's that arrow sticking out of? And let us know.
Yeah.
All right. Tease one before we take a break. You ready for a tease, guys?
Tease us up, buddy boy.
All righty. Here it is. How Jesus' foreskin became one of Christianity's most coveted relics and then disappeared.
Wow. Bananas.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Bananas. If you haven't yet, do us a favor right now. Go on to iTunes and give us a little review, whatever you think we deserve. It does matter. And then after you're done with that, go over to Instagram, give us a follow on Instagram, and send us some strange news stories send us some personal banana stories of your own, and we'll do them in mini-sodes on our Stitcher Premium, which you can get 1 month free if you use our code BANANAS.
We'd be very glad to have you. We hope you do. Kurt, real quick before we get back on with Starly, how were your Portland shows? Did the Bananimals show up?
The Bananimals, every single show was all Bananimals.
It was
amazing. At some point during one show, multiple bananas were thrown at me on stage.
Great. You have a signature thing now.
It was great. And then the second... The Saturday morning I woke up, no voice, which is terrifying as a stand-up. I had no voice Saturday morning because I was just out of practice of like doing 5 hours in a weekend. And then I still had to do Saturday night shows. And the Saturday night shows, I was like scream squeaking both shows. But everyone was so wonderful.
Good.
It was great. It was
Congrats.
Really great. Thank you.
All right. Let's get back into that beautiful Bananas podcast.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, our wonderful guest today is Starly Kine. Starly, welcome back. Tell us about you. You have a new podcast out right now, correct?
Mm-hmm. I do. It's not that new. I mean,
it started in 2020?
It started in, the first season we did a limited run season in 2016.
Wow. Whoa.
Because the podcast is called Election Profit Makers, and we bet on political outcomes on this website called predicted.org, where you can bet real money and win or lose.
That's so fun.
And the reason we started this was because, so my co-hosts are David Reese and John Kimball. They grew up together in North Carolina. They're childhood friends, been friends the whole time. And John was on Predicted in 2016 winning money hand over fist against Trump supporters, and he told David, these idiots, they think Trump's gonna win, it's easy money, everyone should do it.
Oh my god, wow.
And so then we decided to do this limited run 17 episodes series that was supposed to end the day after the election triumphantly. And
yeah,
David and David and I started betting because it was a way of coping with our anxiety about the election. It was a way to put that into something. And we put all this money in, and and had a lot of anticipation. And then the last episode was of that season was the day after the election. And we just sat there crying and in shock. It's a super, the episode itself is soaked in trauma. Yeah. And John lost $6,000, I think.
That's a lot of money.
Wow.
Yeah.
In addition to the worst thing happening.
In addition to, but he had said, we had said that if the worst thing happens, money is going to be the last. And John doesn't have a lot of money or anything, but he accurately predicted if the worst thing happened, it would be the thing you wouldn't be thinking about in the moment. And that was true.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah. And then we decided to bring it back for this election, this last election. And we thought that would just be what we focused on in 2020. We started the second season, second week of March 2020. And then,
so yeah. Do you have your own bracket? Is there a way that your listeners were betting and that you could see? Like, are there percentages and things like that where you're like, oh, shoot, 43% are betting on this outcome? And so am I. So
they mean they tell us it's not, well, we can see, I mean, you can see on the website, you can, the percentages are basically cents. Like, everything is, everything adds up to a dollar. And so, like, right now, Andrew Yang has 43 cents, is going for 43 cents in the New York mayoral primary.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that was that was a very exciting day yesterday when we recorded, because that was the most action we'd seen in real time when Andrew Yang dipped in real time.
Oh, whoa, while you were recording.
Yeah, and that never happens.
you're just high-fiving, like, ticker tapes flying in the air. We got it!
Well, normally we're... John won $10,000 on the last election. He had a real comeback.
Wow.
But the rest, David and I, that doesn't happen to us. But... yeah, it's a way of talking about what's going on and putting our money where our mouth is.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
See you in 2 years. I'll get in on the next
We're still doing it. We were supposed to end on the inauguration and we kept going. So now we're talking a lot about the mayoral primary, which is very exciting.
The very first time I went to a casino, I was 18 in Montreal, and I had never been, and it felt, and the U.S. dollar was very strong, so we were just pulling slot machines and having so much fun. My three friends and I were drinking, we're having a Montreal weekend, and we couldn't lose. I would walk up to a slot machine next to a group of people playing slot machines. I would literally say out loud, "This is easy. Pull it, win about $4, take the coins, walk on to somewhere else." My other friends were doing it too. We were just drunk guys winning a lot, and we all left, I don't know, with a college amount of money, maybe like $300, and we felt like we were billionaires.
Right.
I have never won since. I have never won. I don't like gambling. I don't do it. I go play video roulette when I'm in Vegas because they bring you free drinks and you don't have to bet every time. But man, my luck ran out in Montreal. I think I'm done with gambling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I could get
it's good that you know where it ran out, though. It's good to do a trace, like, if you need to go find it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you got to go back to that.
Yeah.
I got to go back to Wild Cherries.
It's like big.
Yep.
You got to go and reverse it.
You got to reverse the curse. Lose a lot so that you can then win everywhere else.
Well, you got to go to that exact same slot machine. You got to dust it off and put the same. And like wear the same clothes you were wearing from
dust
that day
it off, like,
in college.
No one's used that slot machine since Scotty hasn't.
It's not even plugged
in. It's a magic. Yes.
And then I'll go, "This is hard," and pull it really sadly, and I'll just dump so many coins I drown like Scrooge McDuck. It'll be perfect. Mm-hmm. Curdy, what was that story you teased us up with?
It's a strange one. And it's a historical banana story.
Wow.
This
old
was
bananas.
Sent in by Steph Frenette.
Thanks, Steph Frenette.
And it is from CBC, our favorite broadcasters. Jesus' foreskin became one of Christianity's most coveted relics and then disappeared.
Wow.
So this was written by Nicola Luxick.
Nobody better to cover Jesus's foreskin than Nicola Rustic. He's the Rucksick. What is it?
Ruck.
He's the best in the biz. That's
I think it's a woman. I think it's a woman. Nicola Luxick.
Oh, Nicola. She is the best in the biz.
Not like Tesla.
Right.
Yeah. Nikola Tesla, right? He was Nikola as well. Maybe
that's what I was going, Starly. Yeah. Starly and I were linked up.
I don't understand these Canadian names. Okay. Here it is. The University of Alberta PhD student James White always starts with a quick disclaimer before telling people about his thesis topic. I usually provide a one-minute introduction, warn them what I'm working on is kind of strange.
Okay.
The typical reaction is usually laughter or kind of a response, really? His thesis, which we'll be defending in September, is called Ring of Flesh, the Late Medieval Devotion to the Holy Foreskin. It is pretty good. I think
pretty good title.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And then he says, the idea is, and I'm like jumping around from this article, so I apologize to Nicola. The idea is that Jesus, as a Jewish boy, was circumcised when he was 8 days old, like Jewish boys are. And in the Middle Ages, people developed this idea that his foreskin might still exist
Earth. Oh.
Yeah. That first off, that it would still exist, and they developed a devotion to it. You know, like 1,000 years after the foreskin was lopped off, it just happened to hang out on Earth.
Totally normal.
Is it like a anthropomorphized foreskin?
His literal foreskin.
Yeah, I know, but they're talking about it like, where is it? Like that it's hanging out.
Is it on a locket?
Bars and clubs and stuff. Like, is it sitting?
Having a drink.
I need to show you something.
Yeah. I don't know what maybe Jesus' foreskin could do things that he could do things that we couldn't do. So maybe.
If Jesus was magic, his foreskin can probably do a bunch of stuff we hadn't anticipated foreskin doing.
Yeah.
So he says, I think studying the holy foreskin is a nice ego check for all of us. People 700 years in the future are going to think we're pretty strange too.
Yes.
Right?
Or right now. I think he's strange right now even.
That's
funny.
Yeah,
and also, like, if nothing happened even in this, in recent memory, for him to think that people looking back from the future are going to think we were strange.
Mm-hmm.
He references Graceland later in this article. He's like, Graceland's going to be pretty weird to people. And it's like, is it?
Yeah, just like Jesus's foreskin, Graceland.
So he says this is where it all started, and this is pretty, I think this is the best part of the article. So the first mention of Jesus' circumcision can be found in book Luke 2:21. He says, you know, what probably happened was some clever relic collectors were thumbing through the Bible. When they got to the book of Luke, they read the part about Christ being circumcised on his 8th day, said David Farley, author of In a Reverent Curiosity in Search of Church's Strangest Relics.
Cool book.
And one of them had a light bulb moment and thought, whoa, we could really make a heavenly sum if we, you know, told monks and priests and so on we had a piece of Christ's flesh for sale.
Yeah. I think this is what happened, by the way.
Oh, 100%.
I'm with this guy or gal.
And then, so there were dozens of them, essentially, and they were all over the place. And like a town would be really special. Like people would be very excited. People would visit because they're like, they've got Jesus's dick skin, you know? And
they did.
Go and visit. And it would just be like a little, like the Pope had one. The Pope had one that was like given to him by a king. I think Charlemagne. I'm not positive about that. Don't quote me on that one.
I like that.
But yeah, so like everybody, growing up Catholic, that investment of power into everyday objects was so common.
Yes,
around my house, like literally, because my aunt was a nun, and so my mom would have like, she'd be like, that is holy water blessed by the Pope. And it was just slowly, it was like in a Tupperware container, just slowly evaporating, you know, like as I
rising
would just watch
up.
It. We never did anything with
like
it,
the hot
you
tub.
Know?
Like a lukewarm hot tub. With sexual chemistry fading by the second.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm watching, yes, I was descending into hell. I wasn't rising, I was descending.
Mm-hmm. So the foreskins that were distributed, they were everywhere. Do we think those came from somebody? Those came from some people, men.
Yeah.
Do you think there are men who know that their foreskin was used for that and are living with that secret?
That's interesting.
Well, also having a little bit of the God complex, because their foreskin is the God complex theory backfiring, because these guys actually did feel like gods.
Yeah, there's some guy at a bar in 1314 just like eating an onion raw and like leaning over to a lady like, you know, my dick skin was used as the Christ dick skin. No, because he would be murdered, right? He would just be like murdered as a heretic.
But he would know, so it would infuse him with a little pep.
Oh, yeah, because he knew something.
Yeah. He knew the Pope had his foreskin in his private chambers.
Yeah. Maybe he wore it like an earring or like a nose ring. Maybe the Pope sometimes put it on and just pranced around knowing he's the King of Kings. That's cool.
Oh, man. I have no idea what it would look like.
Maybe the guy whose foreskin was used to give to the Pope was like not confident at all. And he was the guy in the village that everybody was like, that guy doesn't believe in himself at all. One day, a secret cabal came, did this meeting, asked him, took his foreskin from him. And then from that day on, that guy was the cockiest guy in town, and no one knew why.
No one understood why.
Yeah.
They're like, there's nothing special about him at all. And he's like, I know something.
Yeah.
The equivalent of like
when
the nerd takes off their glasses and they become the stuff.
Yes, 80s movies loved that thing. It was like it takes one little thing and now you're the hottest guy in high school.
Yeah.
It was a better time. Yeah, so 12 to 13, and I guess these are child size. We're talking 8 days, which is newborn size. Well, I hope they're out there.
If it's like 8 days, I mean, like my son was not circumcised, so I don't know what the, but it's got to be the teeny, teeny, tiniest piece of flesh.
Nobody kept that.
Dried, it's got to be just like, literally they're walking around like with like a small, like here it is.
Probably looks like, it probably looks like mushrooms actually. Like mushrooms, a piece of mushrooms.
I think it would look like a half of a millimeter long piece of noodle, like dried noodle.
Mm-hmm. That tiny?
It's very a newborn's penis is incredibly teeny tiny.
Thank you.
And like just the foreskin is so teeny teeny tiny. It's not whenever I think of foreskin, I always think of like an adult's penis, and
of
like that
you do.
Part is like ringed off somehow. But it's
our
just
good buddy
so
Flula
little.
Got circumcised at like 30 as
what?
Like a bit. Yeah, he did it
as
like
a
and
bit?
He like doc- yeah, he like documented it. Flula, yeah, 29 or something. Yeah, Flula Borg, the comedian and actor. You can now see him as Javelin on what's that movie called? And I'm blanking. Suicide Squad 2. But yeah, he did it and documented it as an adult.
My friend just did it for the first time.
What?
Wow.
In his 30s, and he's British, and he had always wanted to, but in the UK they do it even before they did it less. And I've actually had never seen
the other team.
Mm-hmm. I'd never seen anyone uncircumcised. And so,
got it.
And he's gay, and he showed, like ceremonially, we were all at a party, and he showed it to us because he was about to part with it. And I had never seen it. And so it was like this, it was like we both got something out of the deal because he got it to be witnessed for the last time, not by the last time, but like by a crowd. And then I got to see, and that's the only time I've ever seen it.
Yeah. If you thought the Jenny Craig before and after photos were spicy, wait till your friend whips out the before and after circumcised shot.
Penis. But what I didn't realize, he got to like, he worked with the doctor. Like you get to like, it's like he showed pictures of what he wanted.
Oh, really?
The kind of, the kind of, there's different cuts.
There are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he worked very closely with, it was a collaborative effort.
Crinkle, waffle,
I am cottage. Fascinated. I had no idea about any of that.
Sorry.
The dogs are getting riled up by this conversation. They like it too. We're all excited about
it. I think my dog, it hits home with
it. Been there.
Yeah.
Hey, this, you're giving me the perfect segue into a story I wasn't going to do, but now we're going for it. I think this will probably be our last story, Curdy B.
Yep.
This was sent in by not_a_mop_.
Before you go in, Scotty, I just want everyone listening to know that every once in a while, Scotty has a virtual background of bananas.
Yes.
And every once in a while, the Zoom doesn't recognize the microphone, and it looks like he's talking into a handful of bananas.
Oh, that's right, baby.
It's fun.
Show them until the end.
It's fun when it happens.
It is fun.
Thank you. Oh, gosh. I got to keep them guessing. Not a mop, a.k.a. Katie Self, sent this. This was written by Caitlin Ellis. Kurt, you love Caitlin Ellis.
Are you kidding me? Every time I see a Caitlin Ellis article, I say, this is going to be a good article. It's going to be well done.
Absolutely, because she writes for our favorite publication, maybe in the galaxy, newshub.co.newzealand.
Newshub.co.newzealand. I have a t-shirt from them.
I pour Folgers in the morning, and I click to newshub.co.nz first thing before the sun rises. Study finds 6% of Americans believe they would win a fight against a grizzly bear. Oh, my gosh.
6%. That is...
Oh, gosh. And
did they also, like, I would like to see a cross map of, like, the percentage of Americans at meth, on meth at the one time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? 'Cause it's probably 6%.
Yes, that's right. And I did also steal the infographic, so after I read the article, we can do a quick rundown of the percentage of Americans that think they could beat this animal in a fight. We'll go through that in just a second. So anyways, in a survey, U.gov asked Americans if they thought they could triumph in a battle against certain animals without any weapons. That is such a crucial detail. We are a tool-using species. The results show that overall, people aren't too confident in their fighting abilities. The animal most people believe they could take was a rat. 72% of respondents say they could beat a rat.
Only 72%?
Starly, how you feeling? Could you take a rat 101, no weapons?
This is like once the rat's been caught, right? Like it's not just, is it just scrambling after the rat? Is it, I've gotten past the screaming because it's jumped around over my feet.
I think it's charging you. Let's imagine the rat is charging you and it's a fight to the death. Could you take a rat?
But it needs to charge me and hold on, because if it's just gonna like charge me and run at me and then run away, I couldn't take it. That's the power of a small creature. It's the same way when you have it's the way a cockroach dominates your life when it's in your house.
It can get away. Yeah, it can inflict pain on you, but then get away from you before you can inflict pain on it.
It's a disproportionate level of fear that it causes.
I see.
And so if the rat was like attacking my face, yes, I could take it.
That's right. There's a percent. Kurt, can you kill a rat if you had to?
Yes.
We're not against killing.
Well, I guess that's right. Yeah. You're just winning the fight.
They're just winning the fight.
You don't have to kill.
Break its legs.
We are pro animal in this podcast.
We're not hurting
anybody
in the real world.
Don't prove it to us.
Yeah.
This is just a hypothetical mind question. Number two, a goose. 61% said they could beat a goose in a fight.
I'm not so sure.
Goose are scary.
Sure.
Yeah.
Geese are terrifying. They have very strong necks, and it hurts, and they're aggressive.
And very
so
strong
opinions. I'm not
opinions.
So sure. They do. Do you know that? Did I ever tell you about that? I don't know if I talked about it on the website once. I made a video when I was just starting off comedy. I thought it'd be the funniest thing. It's just me. I'm on the bathroom.
Yep.
On the toilet. And then hey, I'm running out of toilet paper. And then they hand me some toilet paper. And I go, what's this? White Swan toilet paper. I don't know. And I go to try it. And then it like dissolves into a dream sequence where I'm at the park pantsless.
Okay.
And then I see a white swan, and it looks very much, and I don't hurt a swan. I don't touch a swan.
Of course you don't. We love animals.
I sit on a swan and wipe my ass on the swan, and then that's the whole thing. And shooting it was absolutely terrifying. I got bit so many times by a swan.
Really?
Yes, it was. And it was like 6 in the morning so that no one would be like around to see me pantsless chasing after a swan.
What did the bite feel like?
It feels like someone's imagine a
clothespin.
I know exactly what it is. No, a Like, have you ever had a sunglass cases?
Mm. Uh-huh.
And then imagine someone very strongly clamping your fingers in the sunglass case.
No, thank you.
That's what it feels like.
Okay. Ouch.
I feel like we should have it handy, all references for what every bite feels like. Every
okay,
bite
good.
Every sting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think a rat bite probably feels worse. That's got to be a gross bite.
Yeah, I've never been bitten by a rat.
Oh, it hurts. They have little pointy teeth. I had a rat in the 80s named Cal Ratkin, and he was okay. He was a pretty good rat, and then he got very big and started to get aggressive. It was a lab rat, and then he did start to bite us, and then he magically stopped biting us and went somewhere else. So that can happen, too. We want a different kind of war. I'll give you the rundown. Oh, so... So, despite the data showing most people aren't very sure of their fighting abilities, there is a small population of people, Kurt, as you said, possibly meth users, who believe they could take down a gorilla, an elephant, or even a lion.
It's people who've never seen these animals, I think.
Yeah.
You think you could fight a lion with no... Like, you don't know what
maybe,
a lion
they've
is.
They've only seen them in children's books. They've only seen... them illustrated.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I could take something that's 3 inches big. I could do it, guys.
I have watched Ultimate Fighting Championship more than one time. I can fight an elephant. 6% of people thought they could beat an elephant.
6%.
An elephant that you could, the strongest heavyweight boxer in the world could punch an elephant full force and it would not move an inch. Anyways, I love that confidence. 9% believe they could win against a crocodile. Oh, Americans. Boy,
Americans. That's what people do say when you go abroad. People are like, Americans are the most confident people in the world. And I never realized that before, but now hearing this, maybe it's true.
Are we the most confident based on the least reason to be confident? Is that the equation?
Yeah, or also what I've just heard is that people that like Americans are like, yeah, well, we can do that. And then other people are like, no, I don't think we can we? It's like, yeah, we'll just go there. We can do that.
Yeah, or they're smart enough to go, and why would you want to? We don't want to do that. It's like the challenge. How many people do we know in life that you're like, I'm one of those people, if you say I can't do something, I'm going to do it twice as hard. That's the most American reality show mentality of all time. And I'm
also,
like, you can't do it. I'm like, sounds great to me. Perfect.
And it's what stand-ups, like road dog stand-ups always say, you tell me not to say something, well, then that's the first thing I'm going to say, bro!
Yeah, screw those morons. And I'll wrap up this little story here with U.gov said there was no gender difference when it came to these top-tier opponents. It says answers like this are often whittled down to, quote, male overconfidence, end quote. But in this case, men and women are, quote, about as likely to think they could beat a grizzly bear, a lion, a gorilla, or a crocodile. But gender differences did begin to show up when asked about, you guessed it, you two, wolves and kangaroos. 17% of men think they could beat up a kangaroo. They could not.
No way.
Compared to 9% of women. They asked 1,224 U.S. adults April 12th or April 13th in 2021, and they were over age 18. So 1,200 people. So whatever that math is,
6%. It's like a pretty good. That's a pretty good.
That's a pretty good survey. Yeah, that's a good poll.
Yeah.
Oh, Starly, plug whatever you want to
plug away.
Tell us whatever you want to tell us before we let you go off into this wonderful world.
Election Profit Makers is the podcast. It's funny. It's not just about, you don't have to bet, and it is, we don't have to talk about betting. And Search Party season 4.
Oh, yeah.
All the Search, 1 through 4 is available on HBO Max. Fifth season will be out at some point.
Exciting.
So watch the stuff that's out now, in the future. Remember my words and then watch it then.
Yeah.
Too. Thank you.
It's almost impossible to get 5 seasons of a TV show on now, so congratulations on being a hit comedy show with a great through line, with a great mystery and runner. It's a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Starly, for coming on the show.
You're welcome. It was so fun.
Bananas. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced and engineered by Katie Levine.
Theme music by Kahan.
And all of our artwork is done by Travis Millard.
You can follow us on Instagram at The Bananas Podcast, where we post stories every day and things that we don't cover on the podcast.
Listen, subscribe, and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast.
And if you're interested in advertising on Bananas, please email us at thebananaspodcast@gmail.com. That's thebananaspodcast@gmail.com.